And a very good morning to you. It is 9:30. You're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona in Tucson. This is a live reading of the Green Valley News. My name is Mark DeGroft. Glad to have you aboard this morning. Today's weather, looking for a high tonight, or today, that is, of 98 after, and a low tonight. Sunny, highs in the upper 90s and lows in the upper 50s. Current humidity is 17%. Near record temperature is predicted for the Green Valley Suarita area. Winds out of the southwest of 5 to 10. Clear skies tonight. Winds light and variable. Tomorrow, sunny skies and very warm, high 96. Winds up to 10 miles per hour. It's currently 76 degrees in Green Valley. Again, good morning. Here's the news. A former Green Valley businessman is facing anywhere from probation up to a 12-and-a-half-year prison term after pleading guilty on Tuesday to one count each of fraudulent schemes and artifices and left by misrepresentation. Through his attorney, Jack Randy Roth, 67 years old, admitted that he lied when he told investors in Valley Golf Cars that they would financially benefit from the sales of golf cars that he purchased using the money. Instead, defense attorney Megan LaFada said that Roth intended to use the money for himself or give it to a third party. LaFada told Pima County Superior Court Judge Doug Metcalf that Roth bilked investors out of more than $522,000, not including victims' credit card transfers and victims who were not named in the indictment and didn't want to pursue charges. 14 victims were named in Roth's plea agreement. Several were in court Tuesday. Under the terms of the plea agreement, Roth could be placed on probation for 7 years and ordered to serve 120 days in jail, or he could be sentenced to anywhere from 3 to 12.5 years in prison. If placed on probation, Roth will be prohibited from buying and selling golf carts during those 7 years. Roth, who doesn't have a prior criminal record, will be ordered to pay restitution, and the amounts have been established for all but 3 victims, LaFada told Metcalf. They hope to have those amounts determined prior to Roth's December 2nd sentencing. According to the plea agreement, the restitution amounts that have already been determined range from $13,237 to $90,175. Metcalf invited victims to speak at the sentencing hearing and to write letters in advance of the hearing. Roth was first indicted by a Pima County grand jury in March following a lengthy investigation by the Pima County Sheriff's Department. In that case, he was facing 14 counts of fraudulent schemes and artifices, 9 counts of theft greater than $25,000, 6 counts of forgery, 4 counts of theft $4,000 to $25,000, and 1 count of theft by misrepresentation. Roth was indicted again on August 28th on 1 count of fraudulent schemes and artifices in connection with a single victim who came forward late. Under the terms of the plea agreement, the second case will be dismissed, but that victim will still receive restitution. Detectives began investigating Roth in August of 2023 after a Green Valley resident reported giving Roth money to purchase golf carts as an investment but was never paid after the vehicles were sold. Vehicles have said that more than another dozen people have come forward with similar stories. During interviews with Detective Santiago Hernandez, Roth acknowledged owing investors tens of thousands of dollars. Roth told Hernandez he began an affair with Claudia Felix, an employee, after claiming she had embezzled up to $9,000 from him. Roth claimed over the course of the last 7 years that he loaned Felix $800,000, but she never paid him back. 2 of Roth's victims filed civil lawsuits against Roth, including his former business partner, Connie Walker, who claimed that Roth defrauded her out of tens of thousands of dollars after she dissolved their partnership. Default judgments were issued in both cases. According to her lawsuit, Walker and Roth jointly owned the Abrego Drive property where the business was located, but that he breached their agreement by failing to pay property taxes for the last 3 years. She noted in her lawsuit that although she was never romantically involved with Roth, he has falsely identified her as his business partner and or spouse, and as a result, several people threatening to sue Roth are also threatening to sue her. Walker also sued Felix for unjust enrichment. On Monday, Judge Kyle Bryson consolidated several judgments into one in the Walker case. According to that judgment, Bryson ordered Felix and Organic Connections to pay $92,674 in damages to Connie Walker on March 7th. Felix has never been charged with embezzlement or any other crimes. Court documents didn't state whether there is a link between Felix and Organic Connections. On June 27th, Bryson entered a second judgment against Roth in favor of Walker for just under $225,000. He also ordered Roth to pay Walker more than $41,000 in attorney's fees. On Monday, he further ordered the property on Abrego Drive, with an estimated value of $300,000, be sold and determine Walker's interest in the property is 88%. According to Roth's plea agreement, he'll have to pay Walker an additional $90,000 in restitution. Last March, Judge Brendan Griffin awarded $82,000 in damages to Rick Gibson, plus $8,800 in attorney's fees. As a result of the civil judgment, the plea agreement states he will not receive any restitution from Kim Roth in the criminal case, as reported by Kim Smith. 9:37 and change here at Sunsounds of Arizona. Fraud finder, don't fall for the grandparent scam. This is written by Brian Watson. Last year, I met with a friend's father to hear about his experience falling victim to the grandparent scam. I promised to never use his real name. I wanted to hear directly from him so that I could warn others about this particular scam. Joe received a call from a Phoenix area code, and a young woman's voice called out, "Grandpa." Knowing his granddaughter worked in Phoenix, his initial reaction was thinking that the call was his granddaughter. The sound quality was poor and there was a chaotic background noise. The caller said she was riding in a car with a friend and everyone was arrested after drugs were found following a traffic stop. Soon, an attorney came on the line and promised Joe he could keep his granddaughter out of jail if he paid $10,000. Joe paid the money because he would do anything to keep his loved one out of jail. This scam has several varieties of scenarios. Many involve alleged car crashes. The callers will often plead with their grandparents not to tell mom and dad because they don't want to get into trouble. This scam works because grandparents love their grandchildren and would do anything to protect them. But when it comes to the grandparent scam, many people ask us about artificial intelligence. AI is a tool that criminals can utilize for their schemes, but it takes time and effort to clone somebody's voice. After all, that effort is wasted and the potential victim doesn't answer the telephone. I found that most scammers don't use AI as much as we fear. The recent released movie Thelma starts out with a grandmother falling victim to this phone scam. In the chaos, Thelma volunteers her grandson's name by blurting it out. AI need not perpetrate the scam in this movie. If you receive a grandparent scam phone call, you need to be mentally prepared. Some families have a secret code word or a phrase that they have in place. You can also ask questions only your granddaughter would know. You have to be willing to end the call and directly contact your grandchild, son or daughter. If you are contacted by someone claiming to be from your bank, tell the caller you want to be sure it is not a scam. End the call and locate the bank's customer service number from a copy of your last bank statement or on the back of your ATM credit card. Any legitimate bank employee will agree with your decision. Most phone scams aren't that complicated. They are just executed really well by criminals who utilize scripts that can have a high success rate. Everyone scam victim I have ever met is a smart person who got fooled by a criminal who was very good at what they do. Good news, good news to be aware of, that's for certain. 9:40, Green Valley Justice Court will be getting its own probation officer in December. The Pima County Board of Supervisors signed off on a full-time probation officer during its meeting on Tuesday. During the first year, half of the $100,000 endeavor will come from the county's adult probation department, and half will come from Justice of the Peace Ray Carroll's budget and any grants that they can get. Board Chair Adelita Grijalva asked staff to explore how to fund the position in the future and to present their findings in a few months. Those most likely to be placed on probation are those convicted of DUI and domestic violence, but defendants who have violated orders of protection or who have failed to complete court-ordering counseling classes in classes could also find themselves being monitored, according to Carroll. He expects the officer will spend much of his time in the field making planned and unplanned visits to probationers' homes and workplaces. While Carroll said that he had placed some defendants on supervised probation at the request of the county attorney's office, they've been supervised by probation officers who had to drive from Tucson. Other times, Carroll said he has purposely required defendants to come to court for status hearings more frequently than normal to keep an eye on their progress, but that has become difficult as his caseload continues to grow. Having a local probation officer means more reporting, more stakeholder interaction, and intervention, Carroll said. The need for a Green Valley probation officer came more obvious when he began to see more DUI and domestic violence cases during the COVID pandemic and when the county eliminated Justice Court Precinct 5, resulting in more filings in his jurisdiction, Carroll said. These are people who would absolutely benefit from probation, Carroll said. Probation has a way of working with people to get them to comply way better than any judge could. Probation officers can help defendants avoid second and third arrest, jail time, and even prison time, Carroll said. The mere fact Carroll now has a probation officer could act as a deterrent because there's a $65 monthly supervision fee, Court Administrator Doug Levy said. We all know that there's an election coming up here in, about 13 days, and want to let you know that Sun Sounds of Arizona will be reading the voter's guide, election voter's guide, on air, and that would be today at 2 o'clock p.m., the full reading. The 29th at 8 o'clock a.m., Friday, 11-1, November 1st at 2 p.m., and then the day before the election at 7 a.m., so you can listen to the audio version of the 2024 election guide right here on Sun Sounds. 9:43 from the editor, What I Learned on a Grand Jury. This is written by Dan Shearer, October 18th. I spent 4 months earlier this year on a Pima County Superior Court grand jury. I'd received the summons around Christmas. Didn't think much of it. Journalists don't get picked for juries. At least that's what we've always told each other. So when I walked into jury selection on February 7th, I expected to be the first of 80 people in the room to be dismissed. Instead, I ended up the foreman. And here's how it played out, and some of what I learned, at least the parts I can share without being tossed into jail. So what is a grand jury? When people heard I was serving on a grand jury, they'd often say, I hope it's an interesting case. How about 530 of them? That's how many we heard during a twice-week meetings that lasted through June 4th. This isn't a typical jury where you hear one case and arrive at a verdict over the next day or two. A grand jury case is typically a very quick process during which you're simply deciding whether to bring charges in a case. Some cases lasted 3 minutes, start to finish. Our longest case was about a half an hour. We heard only felony cases, everything from first-degree murder on down. One case could include several charges, and some of those could be misdemeanors. But we were all about the felonies. So what are the mechanics of it? Here's how a typical case played out. Picture a courtroom. As foreman, I'd sit in the judge's chair with the clerk, which is a fellow juror, to my right. The witness box was a little more than an arm's length away to my left. There was a county prosecutor in the room, and in front and just below me was the court reporter. The jurors, and there were 16 of us, sat at individual tables throughout the room facing the front of the courtroom. And who wasn't there? Defendants, defense attorneys, and witnesses. Those are options, but are rarely used. We never saw any of them. The jurors had a very thick notebooks full of state statutes and rules governing the grand jury process that we had studied during 4 days of training. One statute they made, sure we read more than once, said that they could throw us in jail if we shared details of what we were doing in that room. That's different from a typical jury where jurors can share anything about a case once it's over. A grand jury has to keep it quiet for a lifetime. And it makes sense. Not every case that came before us was indicted, which means charged. And even so, the county attorney's office had great discretion after we make the indictments. Very few of these cases ever make it to trial. A name getting out could be very damaging. I thought it would be tough to keep it to myself. I mean, I'm in the business of sharing news, but when I got home at night, what transpired in the grand jury room was the last thing I wanted to think or talk about. I left it at the office, gladly. So what did we do? The grand jury's job is cut and dried. We heard from a witness, almost always a detective or a law enforcement officer. The prosecutor asked questions, the grand jury asked questions, and then everybody but the jury was excused, and we deliberated. We had to determine two things. Was there probable cause based on the testimony and evidence that a crime occurred? And was there probable cause to believe it was committed by the accused? A traditional jury looks at, quote, beyond a reasonable doubt, end quote, but, quote, probable cause, end quote, is a much lower bar, and we reminded ourselves of that many times. We knew cases that cleared that low bar for us would never make it past a regular jury's higher bar, but that wasn't our headache. Pima County's not that big. Several jurors had to recuse themselves from cases because they knew people involved or had some other connection. It happened to me a couple of times because of my work at the newspaper. Our jury of 16 closely matched the demographics of Arizona, from age to ethnic makeup, and included a variety of backgrounds. We had one who barely looked 20 years old, others into their 60s, a couple of students, retirees, public and private sector workers. Spending this much time together, some tipped their political hand, and we covered the spectrum there. The pleasant surprise was that we were all willing to put everything aside to be as fair and impartial as possible. It was never lost on us that we were dealing with lives, and in some cases, freedom. What we did touched jobs, families, and futures. It was sobering and humbling. Our jury worked hard at doing the job right, and there aren't 15 people I would have rather served with. So, what were you paid? Well, not much. Grand jurors get $12 a day, minus parking. But they subsidize us, so if you drove in, it was only $2 to park. We also were paid mileage from the middle of our zip codes. I probably drove the farthest each week, and I was paid just under $77 total. I get to pay taxes on the $12 next year. That's in parentheses. But the best car came in the mail a couple of weeks after our service was over. We all received a get-out-of-jail-free card. No Pima County Superior Court jury duty for 4 years, unless we want it. Of course, the feds and the local courts can still call us. So what are the takeaways? After serving on a grand jury, I'm a lot more street smart. I can spot a gang tattoo. I can explain the benefits of a sawed-off shotgun. I can recite the fair market street value of several illegal drugs, and I know the best part of town to score them. I know what a tutor is, that a lot of bad stuff happens in convenience store parking lots, and that sometimes people are accused of crimes that they didn't commit. And that old saying that you can get a grand jury to indict a ham sandwich? Often true, but we refused to indict a bologna sandwich, and we were presented with a few of those. Of our 530 cases, we chose to no bill, or not charge, 12 of them. That's about average. But the grand jury's real value was in considering the charges recommended by prosecutors and then making changes to them dropping some, increasing or decreasing others, adding charges, and sometimes defendants. Armed with our legal notebooks and a little bit of knowledge, we did what we thought was right by the law. Behind closed doors, no lawyers, no witnesses, no court reporters, our grand jury had zero problem setting decorum aside and unleashing. Everything from venting over a poorly constructed case to the fact that we were stuck in a high-rise with only one functioning elevator much of the time. We also laughed a lot because sometimes that was the only way to deal with the steady drumbeat of bad people, innocent victims, and awful decisions that affected families for a lifetime. My respect for law enforcement has always been high. After all, two of my brothers are retired police officers, but that didn't get me excused either. But these 4 months drove home that frontline work is grueling and often even dehumanizing. There were detectives barely holding it together as they presented yet another child sex case or undercover drug buy. It was clear that some needed to step away from the job for a while. Theirs is a career that can eat away at the soul and negatively affect their own lives if they don't take care of themselves. About 80% of the cases were in some way tied to illegal drug use, most often fentanyl. Whether it was using or selling or a crime tied to it, vandalism, burglary, assault, robbery, or theft, the bulk of cases we indicted had some component of illegal drugs. Even walking from the parking garage to the grand jury building in downtown Tucson was a reminder of lives wasting away, with homeless people sleeping on sidewalks and openly doing drugs. Ever wonder why panhandlers just want a dollar? That's the going rate for one fentanyl pill. They aren't buying a sandwich with that money. So what's next? By the end of the grand jury duty, we had a clear introduction to the problem. Drugs. How to deal with it is another story, but there's no easy solution. Not everybody is salvageable, if I may use that word. A lot of people deserve to be behind bars for a long time. Many others never learn their lesson. We saw some of the names pop up more than a few times. And drug use? Rehab isn't the answer for everybody. A drug abuser can be allowed to break store windows or steal property and beat and rob others to get that next fix. But that cycle of arrest and jail will also get us nowhere. Helping people and keeping the public safe is a delicate balancing act. These are tough questions, and they're in our community. Are just a lot more clear to me now. And that was written by Dan Shear, who is the editor of the Green Valley News and the Sorita Sun. It is 9:53. El Tour de Tucson is November 23rd with an estimated 3,000 cyclists coming through Green Valley and Sorita in one of the nation's largest cycling races. It will also be a time to honor longtime cycling advocate Tom Wilstead, who died in April. Joni Roguki, president of the GVR Cycling Club, will co-captain an aid station on Mission Road to provide cyclists with food, water, and restrooms. This year, the aid station will honor Wilstead. Wilstead was an avid cyclist whose work left an indelible impression on the local cycling community. Tom was very much instrumental in pushing this huge advocacy for cycling, said Roguki, who is also the Green Valley bicycle liaison for El Tour de Tucson. He helped take it to the next level. Wilstead developed a cycling advocacy group, Safe Streets for All Alliance, wrote newsletters for the Posada Peddlers and the GVR Cycling Club, and organized bike drives for local charities. Tom's family asked if we wanted to do something for him. It was donate to the OS3 movement in Nogales, Roguki said. It was another one of Tom's passions. He helped them hit some of their goals. Nogales is such a better place for it. They find bikes for people. We've donated heavily to them, and Tom was a big part of that. Roguki said Wilstead was somewhat quiet, but his work spoke volumes. He didn't really tell people about himself too much, Roguki said. And when he rode his bike, he was on his own. That was the space in which he found his peace and happiness. He was kind of a loner, but he had a power to build connections and make things happen on the back end. Willsted had three passions in life: his family, history, and cycling. He received his graduate degree from the University of Wisconsin and spent his career as a professional archivist. When he retired to Green Valley, he rediscovered his passion for cycling and used his skills in an organization to build an effective advocacy network. Tom was at the heart of cycling's connection to La Posada, Rogucki said. We aren't always fully aware of how valuable and powerful and legendary a person is until they're gone. I knew Tom was that kind of person, but I'm feeling that even more now. I'm not the only one feeling that loss either. Rogucki says volunteers are needed for the aid station. The lifeblood of that aid station is volunteers, she said. It's the only reason it can happen, and they are really a big part of the event. The aid station will be set up at 7 o'clock a.m. and taken down at 3 p.m. on Mission Road, across from the electrical substation. Well, if you're interested in volunteering or have questions about the aid station, you can contact co-captain of the aid station, Joni Rogucki, at joni.rogucki, that's R-O-G-U-C-K-I, at gmail.com, or Tom Parker at tparker, as it sounds, 324, at aol.com. And Joni Rogucki and Tom Parker will host a volunteer meeting at the GVR Photography Club in the Recreation Village of Santa Rita Springs, and that's located at 921 West Via Rio Fuerte in Green Valley on November 20th at 1 o'clock p.m. The OS3 Movement is a nonprofit devoted to building community and promoting healthy lifestyle habits by introducing kids to the world of cycling. For more information on how to get involved or donate, visit www.os3movement.org. And that article was written by Cody Hedges, who is an intern. Coming up on 9:57 here at Sun Sounds of Arizona, thank you for listening. Fred Harvey brought class, comfort, and good food to those traveling in the Southwest on the Atchison, Topeka, and Santa Fe railroads. The dining cars replicated his fine dining rooms in trackside restaurants, hotels, and resorts. Harvey died in 1901, leaving a legacy in 19th and 20th century American culture. The Fred Harvey Company continued with the English entrepreneur's vision and successes. Shortly before Harvey's death, the company embarked on a silver and turquoise jewelry line carrying the Harvey name. They learned that tourists wanted to find Native American jewelry that was less expensive and more comfortable to wear than heavy traditional silver pieces. The company enlisted Native artisans in New Mexico and Arizona to design and create pieces. Techniques such as stamping, repoussé, and overlay were commonly employed to create intricate designs and textures. Hand stamping involved using metal stamps to impress patterns into the silver, while repoussé involved hammering and the reverse side of the metal to create a raised design. These traditional methods required significant skill and precision, resulting in unique and highly detailed pieces. Hallmark designs were lightning bolts, cross row arrows, thunderbirds, sun rays, and dogs. And artists enhanced their silver creations with natural turquoise from Arizona, New Mexico, and the Nevada mines, and coral, jet, and mother of pearl. And that, my friends, will take care of the morning reading of the Green Valley News. I thank you for listening. Mark DeGroft with you. Stay tuned for more programming here on Sun Sounds. Once again, thanks for listening. Stay cool and drink water.